Foundation members would like to invite you, your family, and friends to their 31st anniversary and tribute to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Monday, January the 18th, broadcast live from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. from Highland Christian Center in Portland. As in years past, there will be a variety of local and regional choirs, performers, and entertainers, all paying homage to the work and legacy of Dr. King and our efforts to keep his dream alive. So remember, Monday, January the 18th, at the Highland Christian Center, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and of course, right here on KBOO FM radio.
The greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
Today on Wing, some creative campaigns women organized for their issues in 2015.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. Visualize, if you will, a group of young women holding up a tampon the size of a conference table. On it in big red letters are the words, "Mr. Hockey, stop taxing my period." Hockey is the National Treasurer of Australia. As he took questions from the public on May 26th, Sydney University student Subhita Vimalaraja spoke for the group on the screen.
Subhita Vimalaraja in Newtown, New South Wales.
I started a petition against the taxing of sanitary products under the GST. It now has over 86,000 signees and over 11,000 submissions to your Better Tax Review. Mr. Hockey, do you think that sanitary products are an essential health good for half the population?
The National Treasurer said he would take the matter up with Australia's state treasurers at their next meeting. In August, the states failed the required unanimous vote to remove the 10% tax, which is said to net the government $25 million a year. Meanwhile, in Canada, a national election campaign was in play. A normally divided parliament gave unanimous consent to removing the federal tax. Jessica Noller reports.
As of July 1st, Canadian menstruators across the country no longer have to pay the so-called tampon tax on any menstruation items, including tampons, pads, diva cups, and the like. In January, an online petition at change.org was started by the feminist group Canadian Menstruators. The call was to end the federal GST tax on feminine products by including them in the Excise Tax Act. The Act covers items that are considered essential, making them exempt from GST. Items such as groceries, wedding cakes, and Viagra are already covered under the Act. Canadian menstruators argued that taxing menstruation products was gender discrimination because those most likely to buy such products are women, genderqueer, and trans folks. The group also argued that a flat GST tax was regressive in nature, noting that this put an extra burden on those of low income, where people who are also non-white, genderqueer, and trans-identifying tend to be overrepresented. The federal NDP used one of their opposition days in Parliament to force the amendment.
Orders of the day, order du jour.
Government orders, business of supply. Opposition motion, feminine hygiene products, standing in the name of Mrs. Matheson.
Ms. Matheson, seconded by Ms. Freeman, moves that in the opinion of the House, the government should remove the GST from feminine hygiene products. The Honourable Member for London Fanshawe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I will be sharing my time with the member from Argenteau, Papineau, Mirabel.
I am honored to rise in this House today to introduce our new Democrat Official Opposition Day motion that, in the opinion of the House, the government should remove the GST from feminine hygiene products. Mr. Speaker, while we have come a long way in regard to gender equity in Canada, we still have far to go. Let me first speak of the victories. Women in Canada are considered persons under the law with equal access to all the rights and privileges of men in Canadian society. And since the election of Sister Agnes MacPhail to this House in 1921, we've seen the proportion of female members of Parliament steadily rise. On Tuesday this week, the province of Alberta made history, not just for electing its first NDP majority government with Premier-elect Rachel Notley at the helm, but for electing the most women in any government in Canadian history. The Royal Commission on the Status of Women in Canada, the UN Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, of which Canada was a proud signatory, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, along with the Constitution and the Beijing Platform for Action, are all components of the roadmap to sexual equality in Canada that stipulated that all of the costs of physical and social reproduction, most of which constitutes the unpaid work of women raising a family, caring for frail and elderly family members, and housework, should be shared among all members of society. But since then, Mr. Speaker, and at this point, I will turn from speaking about victories to speaking about the challenges. Canada has not fared so well in the area of gender equity. Placing a discriminatory tax on products that are used exclusively by women, girls, and transgendered people is unfair. Allowing that tax to continue for 25 years is inexplicable. This country, which in the 1990s could boast about being on the top of the international heap with regard to gender equity, using UN Nations gender equality indicators, has now slipped to number 19 on the world stage. Federal tax policies are structured such that the ratio of profit between women and men is 60-40 or less. In other words, federal tax policy favors those with a higher income, and since men by and large earn higher incomes than women, men are advantaged and women are disadvantaged under current taxation regimes. And women, on average, make only 78% of the wages enjoyed by men for doing work of equal value. And, Mr. Speaker, the same reality of inequities touches on almost every part of women's experience in this country. There is one way that we as a House can correct gender injustice right here, right now. Today we have the opportunity to make a minor adjustment to the Excise Tax Act that would remove the GST from feminine hygiene products. Mr. Speaker, allow me to speak about something the government has deemed a luxury, menstruation. If you can believe it, feminine hygiene products actually fall under the category of luxury items in the Excise Tax Act and are therefore subject to the federal goods and services tax. This is just the reality. As a woman, I think I can call myself an expert on this topic, Mr. Speaker. And while I have heard menstruation described in many ways, the curse, the crimson tide, a visit from Auntie Flo, monthlies, feeling delicate, or the big red monster, I have never heard it described as a luxury. Why then are feminine hygiene products, pads and tampons, treated as luxury items under the Excise Tax Act? Why are women discriminated against while this tax leaves such things as wedding cakes, chocolate chips, cocktail cherries and Viagra exempt? Taxing female hygiene products amounts to gender discrimination, Mr. Speaker, clear and simple. And with this motion, we have the opportunity today to rectify that. This motion calls on the government to remove the GST from feminine hygiene products, simply remove the tax. As often happens when legislation is drafted quickly or thoughtlessly without consultation or debate, or announced outside this chamber in places such as, say, Davos, it is the people who can least afford to bear the brunt of the inequity that suffer the most because of it. Taxing feminine hygiene products is symbolic of the systemic inequality Canadian women face in all areas of life, especially women in poverty. I would like to thank Jill Pybiak, Kathleen Fraser, and the organizers of the Canadian Menstruators Group for initiating the awareness campaign on change.org that has resulted in over 10,000 signatures on a paper petition to this House and over 72,000 online signatures in support of this initiative. I am so encouraged by the organizing and mobilizing efforts of these young feminist activists. As a result of their efforts, my office has received countless emails and calls of support. I have heard from women who cannot afford feminine hygiene products and feel compelled to stay home during their periods. I've heard from students who need to count out and parcel their pads and tampons to make sure they last to the end of the month. I've heard from women's shelters and food banks who keep a steady supply of feminine hygiene products on hand for women who can't afford them once they've paid the rent and fed the kids. The mobilizing effort of the Canadian Menstruators Group has also resulted in the organization of pad parties where donations for women's shelters are collected along with petition signatures. Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is that these items are essential. Women do not and cannot choose to have a period. Taxing feminine hygiene products is blatant gender discrimination. It is an injustice that can be quite simply rectified. This House has the power to amend the Excise Tax Act and deem feminine hygiene products as essential, thereby removing the tax. Even with the recent reduction in the GST, people with periods are still paying unfairly into the system. According to Statistics Canada, it's estimated that in 2014, approximately 18,000 Canadian women between the ages of 12 and 49 spent about $520 million on menstrual hygiene products. This amounts to approximately $37 million in government sales taxes collected from women. It just makes me see red, Mr. Speaker. It may seem small, but a tax on tampons, pads, panty liners, menstrual cups, and alternatives can add up quickly when combined with the systemic challenges faced by many women, trans people, genderqueer people, and other menstruators in terms of income, housing, and economic stability. My predecessor in this initiative, the former Member of Parliament for Winnipeg Centre, Judy Wassilis-Elise, said, "The GST on tampons and sanitary napkins amounts to gender-based taxation. The taxation of essential and necessary products used exclusively by women is unfair and discriminatory and unfairly disadvantages women solely because of their reproductive role. Removing the tax on these products would be of particular value to lower-income women. This motion allows us to correct the injustice here and now today, remove the tax and make life more equitable and affordable for Canadian women. We can do this, Mr. Speaker, and after we do, feminists, young and old, male and female and otherwise identifying, can move on to the next challenge in achieving a Canada that is equitable, accessible and fair, and where no one of us is left behind." Thank you.
The amendment passed unanimously on May 7th, which has people speculating why the Conservative Party finally gave in. The NDP had been advocating to remove the tax since 2004. In general, there seems to be agreement across the political spectrum that removing the tax is the fair thing to do. I'm Jessica Noller from CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby, BC, on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, Stolo, and Squamish Nations. Thank you to Irene Matheson, NDP, and Slamfind for files.
In the UK, activists have their own petition to remove the so-called sanitary tax. Parliament imposed a 17.5% tax after the UK joined Europe's common market in 1973. The Labour Party reduced the tax to 5% in 2000. The tax can't be removed entirely till the European Parliament is convinced to agree.
I'm looking for my sister. Where did she go? Where did she go?
Why? There's a crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women in this country that has become a national tragedy.
As previously reported in Wings, both the United Nations and the Organization of American States have pressured Canada to hold an inquiry into the large and growing number of Indigenous women who are murdered or disappear. After the landslide defeat of the Harper Conservatives in November, Canada's new Prime Minister appointed an Aboriginal woman, Jody Wilson-Raybould, as Minister of Justice, and also Carolyn Bennett to be Indigenous Affairs Minister. These ministers have begun carrying out the Liberal Party's campaign promise to hold an inquiry, starting with consultations on format and mandate. Mobilizing public sentiment through art played a major role in bringing the missing women issue to the top of the winning party's agenda. One of the projects still touring North America is titled Walking with Our Sisters. Wings brought women from local communities and around the world to cover the opening at the Indigenous Band Hall in Comox, B.C. Here are excerpts from our live radio broadcast hosted by Gunarji O'Sullivan.
I'm looking for my sister. Where did she go? Where did she go? Why?
There's a crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women in this country that has become a national tragedy.
There needs to be a shift in how people think of Indigenous women. We are powerful, and yet we've been oppressed for so many years. And this missing and murdered women is a reflection of how we have been oppressed. And this is something that needs to change in the Indigenous and the non-Indigenous communities.
We're coming to you live from the Comox Band Hall, and we are smack in the middle of a memorial installation. It's called Walking with Our Sisters with Tracy Bear. And now I want to talk about the vamps. A lot of us don't know what vamps are. Mm. What are vamps and what do they symbolize?
A vamp is the top part of a moccasin, which is footwear for many Indigenous people. It's the decorated part of it. When Christy Belcourt had her idea, she thought about walking with our sisters and how the unfinished moccasin would represent the unfinished lives of our missing and murdered women. And so she said, I'm going to make these 600 pairs to represent the then 600 missing and murdered. And then she started making them, and she thought, I can't do 600 pairs. So they did a larger call out, made a deadline, and as that deadline hit closer, they were nowhere near 600. So she's like, everyone, all my friends, we need to get together. Well, little did she know, everyone in this earth is procrastinators, and 1 month before the deadline, she was overwhelmed with over 1,500 pairs of vamps. It has grown to about 1,900 pairs now, and they come from all over North America primarily, but they are from Europe, Australia, New Zealand as well. And they are made of all different materials. You'll see there's fish scale ones, there is soapstone ones, there's your traditional beadwork, quill work.
I saw a seal skin vamp.
All of these vamps are representing loved ones, and people are expressing themselves through art. Oftentimes we feel helpless when we lose someone, and so this was a way for people to express their grief and honor the missing and murdered.
Also, a new addition to the vamps are the children's vamps, the little ones, everything from a little baby to like a toddler. Can you explain to us what the significance of the children's vamp is?
The children's vamps are smaller, and they represent the children who went to residential school and did not return home.
We don't want the young men to feel lost as if they don't have a role in our communities, because their traditional role was that of protector. Mm-hmm. You know, they were the ones who protected the spirit of the women. That was their job. And we need to like reinstate that. We need to like stop the cycle of abuse and start to strengthen our young boys so that they can learn to be respectful and the protectors of the female spirit.
How do grandparents and aunties and uncles fit into this picture of keeping our children safe and preventing sexual exploitation and human trafficking?
I think it's not just relatives. I think that every community member should treat all kids as if they are their kids. That is the village mentality. There is not my kid and your kid and you deal with your kid and I'll deal with my kid. No, as a village, everyone knows that your investment in any child is an investment in the community. And that really needs to be the shift in thinking. So we're not having this very secular, divided community where you deal with your problems and I'll deal with mine. We need to work as a community to actually help everybody.
And one of the most important teachings that I have got with being on the National Collective is understanding that everywhere we go, there's a community that is thriving and coming together collaboratively. And it's such a beautiful thing to watch as people come together through ceremony, through the songs and dance, through eating. They come together and they build this community even before we get there. And so when we are installing this type of art memorial, you'll see strangers that have just met, and they're laughing and they're crying and they're working really hard. So one of the most beautiful things that comes from this, because it is a memorial for our missing and murdered Indigenous sisters and mothers. And we can't forget that, but what we need to see is the community that it offers. And the good of this, besides awareness, is bringing people together and making those relationships stronger so that we can solve this incredible social issue that we have today.
We're at the Walking With Our Sisters Memorial Installation. It's happening from July 31st to August 2015. It's located at 3320 Comox Road in Courtney, BC, and it's free. Everybody is welcome. Men, women, and children of all different races, come take a walk and honor our sisters. For further information, you can check out www.comoxvalley.com or www.walkingwithoursisters.
That was coverage from Walking With Our Sisters, an art project touring to raise respect and seek justice for Canada's missing and murdered Aboriginal women. Another art-based campaign targeting the environment is rising in the Netherlands. Mindy Rann reports on the Plastic Madonna movement.
Almost all humans have plastic in them. Even babies in the womb have plastic in them.
This startling statement was made by Nicola Chadwick, a volunteer with the Plastic Madonna Project, a Dutch initiative they hope to make global. Earlier in the year, carton collection boxes appeared in most urban areas in the country. They had a sign that included a drawing of a reclining nude woman and a breastfeeding baby. Under that, it asked everyone to pick up one plastic PET throwaway bottle from the street and to donate it. I met up with Chadwick in a public square in Amsterdam and asked her to explain the project to me.
Peter Smith founded an organization called CLEAN, which stands for Complaining Really Doesn't Pay in Dutch. And he decided that if you could shred all these bottles and use the plastic in a 3D printer, you could print a Madonna with child. The symbolism of the Madonna is that we are feeding our children plastic. We're leaving behind a world that's going to be so contaminated with plastic that almost all living organisms at some point will have plastic in their systems, and when we eat food, we'll be eating plastic.
So that's why the breastfeeding Madonna.
Yeah. We're reaching out to organizations all over the world to write a story for our website. So we've got a world map on our website, and we asked them to send us a bottle. So we want a bottle from every country for the baby. We've reached 90,000 bottles now. We're aiming for 100,000 bottles. That's all being stored in a huge warehouse. We're actually looking for more space. That's going to be transported to a place where they can process the plastic so it can be used in a 3D printer. We've got a 3D specialist who's going to actually make the Madonna. We've made an ear.
How big is the ear?
It's about this, yeah. It's about as big as a shoebox, maybe, a small shoebox, kid's shoebox. It's going to be a 12 meters long Madonna displayed on Scheveningen Beach, which is near The Hague. We want to reach ordinary people that, you know, go to the beach, just run their lives, not really thinking about plastic soup or whatever. I mean, people like to get on with their lives. We want to show them in a kind of fun way, look, this is what we're doing, because people aren't aware. And I'm sure when they are aware, they will start thinking about what they can do to prevent plastic soup.
Before we go any further, what on earth is plastic soup?
Plastic soup is the accumulation of plastics in the oceans. That runs off from streets, that runs off through the canals, it runs off through rivers, and it ends up in the oceans. and there's five huge islands of sea, floating islands. It's called soup because it looks like soup. Some of it floats on the surface, but as you go down, there's more and more of it. So it's a bit like a pyramid, if you like, and they don't break down, but they break up. So you have lots and lots of tiny nano pieces and microplastics, and that all accumulates on the ocean floor.
And what is that doing to the marine animals and plant life in the ocean?
Marine animals think it's plankton. There's actually more plastic soup than plankton and more microplastics than plankton in the water, so they eat it. Plastic has the tendency to pick up toxins on the way because toxins are hydrophobic, which means that they don't like water, so when they see a piece of plastic, they attach themselves to it. When the animal ingests the plastic, the toxins let go again and they go into the fish or the bird or whatever. And the plastic also accumulates in their stomach, so quite often they die. There's films and photographs made of islands that are 4,000 kilometers from any mainland that actually have nesting birds and their young dying on them because they've ingested pieces of plastic. And this can happen in fish, this can happen in birds. Obviously fish is a kind of start of the food chain. So animals that eat the fish that have ingested plastic, they also accumulate plastic and they also pick up pieces of plastic through their own feeding methods. Eventually it lands on our plate because we eat fish and plastic is in the fish.
It's not only in their stomachs, it's actually
getting into their tissues. So there's a knock-on. When an animal eats plastics and we eat that animal, then we get plastics inside us too.
Where did all this plastic come from and how did it get into the ocean?
Most of it comes just from us dropping litter on the streets, dropping a bottle, dropping a plastic bag, dropping a cigarette butt, dropping whatever that washes into our drains, that gets into our water systems. It is filtered out to a certain extent, but you can never filter it all out. It gets into our waterways, ends up in the seas, is taken to the oceans.
So it's us, basically.
It's us. When I pick up along the shoreline, then I'll be picking up largely plastic, broken buckets, condoms, condom packages, that kind of stuff.
What is PET plastic?
Most bottles that you buy with a drink in it will be PET plastic. You can see a small triangle with like arrows going around in a triangle and the letters PET. It stands for something that I can't pronounce. And it's basically harmful. I mean, babies' bottles are made from a different sort of plastic. They're not allowed to have harmful substances in babies' bottles. So why do we let our kids drink soft drinks from bottles that have a harmful substance in them?
Do they actually break down? Do you get microparticles of the plastic?
You do if you reuse the bottles a lot of times. And once they start getting a little bit abrased, then you should throw them away because that plastic is getting into your system. Almost all humans have plastic in them. Even babies in the womb have plastic in them.
So are we beyond the point where we can clean up all of these plastics out of the ocean? Is there anything we can do about it?
We can do a lot. We have to stop it at source. We can prevent an awful lot getting into the sea, but it's going to take a multifaceted approach. You're going to have to do a lot of things. It can be people picking up litter in the streets, but also you have to take measures to stop plastics getting into the environment in the first place. There's got to be legislation taken by governments. It's the next big problem. Once we've started solving CO2, it will be plastic soup.
Can we do anything about what's already sitting in the ocean?
There are projects to combat that. We'll never be able to clean the oceans completely. We have to turn off the tap. We have to stop plastics getting into the sea. That is urgent. That is absolutely urgent because it's accumulating so much now that many countries are starting to notice plastics washing up on their shores. The reason we have this accumulation of plastic soup is because we think it doesn't matter, because it doesn't make any difference. And if we just turn around and think it does make a difference collectively, if we all do something, a little thing, not a big thing, a little thing, then that really does make the difference.
That was Nicola Chadwick with the Plastic Madonna Project. Plans are to send the first Plastic Madonna on a tour of Europe next summer, while the second Plastic Madonna will be 3D printed and constructed as a float for the Rio Olympics. This is Mindy Rann for the Women's International News Gathering Service.
To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or check our page at facebook.com/wingsradio. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor